This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
Here at Audi, we have some good news to share with the world. Unfortunately, our good news is bad news for our competition. So to soften the blow, we brought in the very best at delivering bad news. Someone's mom.
The Audi A4 is the biggest, fastest, most fuel-efficient car in its class. Oh, honey, I know it's hard to hear, but it'll be okay.
I'm David Jones, inviting you to test drive an impressive new Audi A4 Premium today at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at GeraldJonesAudi.com. Audi. Truth in engineering.
Well, Peter Kessler is a golf historian working at Golf Channel and the PGA Tour Network. He's got the number one podcast in golf with the Peter Kessler Show, available at revolutiongolf.com. At the end of a major championship, I turn to Peter for perspective. It's a pleasure to welcome Peter Kessler back to the Augusta Golf Show. Hello, Peter.
How's the best voice in the business doing?
I don't know. How are you doing?
Not as good as you. You sound great. How's everything?
Everything's good. This is something we've never done before. When I had you on after the players, we're talking about Martin Kaymer. So now we're talking about Martin Kaymer. Was that a great U.S. Open performance? Will that be historic as we move along through the years?
No. The thing that will be remembered through the years is that Eric Compton finished tied for second, because that was a more interesting story. I mean, the guy just blew him away. 65-65, the thing is completely over, and there's no great players chasing him. It's a bunch of also-rans who are 6 and 7 back. Nobody other than Henrik Stenson, to me, would have been capable on the Sunday to make a charge in hopes of Kaymer falling back significantly. But historic, if you're looking at numbers in the book, yes, but in so many other ways, it was not. The course was historic. I thought the course was phenomenal, but in terms of the win itself, you know, that's like 49-3 in a football game. That is a total wipeout, and it was brilliant in its execution. He hit the ball better than everybody else, and he putted better than everybody else. I mean, from 10 feet, he was absolutely unbelievable, and I think he's sort of a, in his own funny way, a charming kind of a guy. He's not fun to watch on the golf course. He's, you know, very Teutonic. He's got that whole German thing, you know, in his blood, of course, and in his upbringing. So, you know, he's a little like Longer, a little like Nicholas too. You know, Jack's of German heritage, and he had that Teutonic sort of thing going on in terms of his personality and his discipline. I think Kaymer comes from that group. I just think that we'll see him play really great from time to time. I don't, you know, all of a sudden on Monday morning, he's anointed as the next great player and number one again, and the journey back. Every time a guy wins a tournament, it can't be he's now going to be number one. Nobody's good enough to be number one because nobody's consistent enough to be number one, which is maybe why if number one comes back, things will be more interesting.
Do you think he has an interesting resume? And I wonder if it will be the resume of the future, a player's, a PGA, a U.S. Open. He's not going to rack up 6 Arnold Palmer Invitationals or 5 Buick Invitationals. I wonder if moving forward, just by the nature of the beast, this will be the future Hall of Fame resume. A lot of big tournament wins.
God, I hope not. You know, it's not the hall of I played pretty good. It's not the hall of a nice career. I mean, you know, if you really boil this down to its essence, and I don't mean to denigrate the man's performance or the quality of his career in any way, but, you know, in the last 20 months, he had 3 things happen. He made a good putt at the Ryder Cup. He won the U.S. Open, and he won the Players' Day. That's 3 things, and one of them was a putt in 20 months. That's not that big a deal. It's just not that big a deal. What is a big deal, wire-to-wire at the Players, followed up by wire-to-wire at the U.S. Open. A brilliant pair of performances in a very short window where you might not lose your form that quickly, as most players tend to do. Players don't play well for long periods of time. Play for a few weeks, they play terrible for months. That's just the nature of the game. So that was brilliant, but overall, and the PGA Championship, well, that was 2010. It was almost 5 years ago. I mean, how much, you know, credence are we going to put on that about evaluating him as a player now? He's not even the same player. He's a better player now. So I'm much more interested in his potential than I am in what he's accomplished so far.
You sound like you liked the new and improved Pinehurst number 2.
I really do. I played there a lot, and, you know, I certainly have issues, and I could name the greens, 1, 2, 6, 9, and 15, that need to be, you know, redone. And those greens, you know, were never meant to be crowned. I mean, there's so much overwhelming evidence that all that happened there was they didn't have the money to top dress the collars and the aprons, and all the top dressing for decades went into the middle of the greens, and then it was spread out unevenly with the bulk staying in the center. Those greens in some cases are 12 and 14 inches higher than they were ever intended to be, and they were already so built up in 1947 that Donald Ross said to Pete Dye, if I live long enough, I'm going to shave off some of these crowns because I never intended that to be the case, and then he passed away the next year. So those five greens aside, I was thrilled with the presentation. I love advancing the golf ball. You know, when there's deep rough, guys very rarely make doubles from deep rough because they can chip it out into the fairway and knock it on the green in one or two putt. They're not going to get in trouble twice and have an iron, and it's not a driver that goes longer and wider. So you tend to see lots of pars and bogeys even when guys wedge it out. But when you have a situation like this where you can advance the ball, then sixes become part of the equation on par fours. Kevin Na, Henrik Stenson, back and forth over greens, if you hit your first shot too cleanly or without spin from that stuff. So it introduced double. It introduced really interesting shot making around the greens because they weren't hitting and holding from the rough as, you know, from the scrub really, you know, as much as if they'd been in the fairway. There was going to be some release. But some of the guys really put some good stop on the ball. Witness Henrik Stenson stopping the ball out of that stuff. Martin Keimer hitting some great stuff out of that, some great shots out of that stuff. So with an appropriate lie, total luck of the draw, no problem. Golf isn't fair, you know. And no, I don't want to say it wasn't intended to be because I don't think anybody devised it and says I intended to be unfair. But that's just the nature of the thing. But I thought it looked great. I appreciate brown on a golf course. And other than those five greens, I thought it was a wow.
We are talking with Peter Kessler, host of the Peter Kessler Show, available at revolutiongolf.com. Next time we play the U.S. Open, Phil's going to be this close to 45 years old. We can count on our finger the winners of the U.S. Open at 45 years old. Are we done with the career Grand Slam talk?
Well, I mean, I think he's got the yips. And, you know, and what did Henry Longhurst say? Once you've had them, you've got them. And he even said the hole looks like a thimble to me, and it was very difficult to watch him from 5 feet and in. His posture changed, he got more hunched over, his back was much more rounded than, I almost wanted to send a message to say, you're slumped over your putter, you're slumped, man. And I thought it was atrocious. He was hitting them so hard. Those greens were like, you know, rolling it across the top of a glass desk fast. So I'm worried. When you combine that with his ability to hit brilliant recovery shots, if you can't make the putts, the recovery shots for par didn't matter. And he didn't do that this week. And that makes me nervous about the future, since he hasn't played really two good rounds in the same tournament since he won the Open almost a year ago now.
There was last week, rightfully so, a lot of talk about Payne Stewart. Give me your favorite Payne Stewart story.
I'm not sure if it's my favorite, but it's one that I never forget. It's probably my most indelible memory, which was on October 10th of 1999, I was sitting on the steps behind the 18th green at the Old Course at St. Andrews, and at that afternoon, that Sunday afternoon, the Dunhill Links, which was the old tournament where three players from each country would show up, the predecessor to the Dunhill, it was the Dunhill Cup, and now it's the Dunhill Links. And so at that time, you had three players on a team, and on Sunday at a singles match, and Payne Stewart finishes his singles match, and he walks up to me, and he sits down on the steps. It's like 3 o'clock in this beautiful, beautiful afternoon. The weather had been sensational, and he apologized for not having done a TV show with me. I was at the Golf Channel at the time a few weeks previously because he said a couple of silly things on camera that caught the news, and he didn't want me to have to ask about it, and so we didn't do the show. And he said, look, I know I owe you a show, And he said, look, in just a few weeks, it's going to be November. He said, I'm going to be in Orlando all of November. You live in Orlando, so let's play golf. Then, you know, let's go get drunk and do the show. And I said, can we play golf, do the show, and then go get drunk? And he said, yeah, that'd be great. And he said, hey, look, he said, don't forget, we have all the time in the world. And 2 weeks and one day later, he was gone. And I was happened to be in Hawaii at the time on some kind of an outing thing. And Maltby was there and Chichi Rodriguez. And it was early in the morning when we got on the driving range on the Monday morning that he passed away. And Chichi Rodriguez had his phone and he said, something's going on with Payne Stewart's airplane. And we didn't know what that meant. And he wasn't sure. And then a few minutes later, he said, I think his airplane crashed. And then Maltby, who had gotten very, very close to Payne Stewart, where they previously had not been, a couple of guys who got along at all. Their wives became close. They became close. And Roger went down to his room, and he stayed there for the day. And that night, Stephen Stills from Crosby, Stills, mm-hmm. and Nash, who was also a good friend of Payne Stewart's, and Payne had played harmonica, you know, on stage on a couple of songs from time to time. And so they were close. And Stills was there, and he played a concert for about an hour just on his acoustic guitar. And the first song that he introduced was Payne Stewart's favorite song, which I had never heard before, and I still can't think of the name of, a very obscure blues song. And he played it, and as he played it, the moon rose, and it was a chilling, eerie, an amazing kind of a moment. And so that experience with Payne, followed by the celebration of his life on the day that he passed, was a pretty compelling combination of events that I don't forget.
It's a great story. I always appreciate the time. Thank you, Peter.
It's a great pleasure to be with you. You're the greatest, and I hope to see you soon.